from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth. Good evening, good afternoon on Wolf Spirit Radio and Revolution Radio, 115% homegrown organic Revolution Radio. We are, that's right, we're 115% listener supported. Like, we need more. We need that extra 15%. Just to keep going through the month. So if you could kindly drop some coins in the support. In fact, if you drop some coins, we'll send you a coin if you're in the States. And you give us $50, we'll give you a silver dollar. You know, we'll give you an ounce of silver. It's a bar, but it's a, yeah, that's a dollar. A dollar is an ounce. That's what it is. It's a measurement. Anyhow, so it's very lovely to have you all here. And tonight I have a very special friend that I'd like to bring in just right now. And until she's connected here, let's just cover the time. And the guest I have tonight is a fellow Wolf Spirit Radio host. And we've been running a Thursday morning or Thursday afternoon, depending on where you are, or Thursday evening in the UK. But depending on where you are, we've been running this show on Thursdays, and about 20 weeks ago, she came up to me and said, I've got this thing, I've got this message, and he seems to be some kind of some sort of person from some far, far galaxy, he's like in a prison planet, and you know, he's got a tattoo of a barcode on the back of his head, and he's known by a number, and he's sitting in a cell, and he's got a shaved head, and he's like pale and pale blue, and you know, like a very, you know, very alien dystopian society kind of image of there they were as a society, completely under the control of reptilian overlords who were known as the Vinkala, who appeared to be quite innocent at first, and then they took over these people from within, and so we meet this person who was known as a number, and he gave himself a name. So before I name this person, I'm going to name my guest, who is my dear friend, Jessica Morocco. Good afternoon. How are you, Jess?
Hello, JP. How are you?
I am very well. Oh, could you move the mic just a little bit away from your mouth?
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that better?
That's lovely. Yeah, that's lovely.
You okay,
just,
good.
Just a little overdriven. So how's that for a synopsis of like where it started? Or how was it for you? And of course, would you like to introduce yourself to the Monday night audience, which is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Studio B, and as I said, we're a listener supported station, so go to the support area and drop some coins in the PayPal. We've been doing this thing, and how did it start? You don't want to tell people about it, because it's become a lot more than it appeared to. Sorry, a lot more than it appeared to be at the beginning, didn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, I probably started when I was a child. I mean, I've been open up psychically from a very early age, and had experiences where, you know, I wrote about in my book, The Seer, Violets in the Grass, where I recall a spacecraft hovering over my house and finding myself outside in the middle of the night, wondering why I was out there by myself. I was probably about 4 years old or so, and having a very distinct, clear vision of it, remembering it, and also this really distorted, fisheye lens type of atmosphere where everything had this distortion, and my home looked like it was on the top of the world. It was very strange. And I never forgot that imagery, but we're not here to really talk about my book in particular, but I think it was probably because I was so open and open psychically, and also having a very unusual experience where I opened up to the Akashic Records before I recognized what they were at probably around the age of 30, having a full movie screen going on in my inner seeing. And so having these type of things, you know, just I think my being open allowed me to be able to receive these types of transmissions. So as I started, I got certified in hypnosis and past life regressions because I found them very helpful for me personally, and there's a lot of people that are opening up now and becoming more aware and remembering who they are and who they were, and which is all one and the same. It's just remembering their soul experience. And as I started to see all this stuff happen, I thought, well, let me, you know, keep helping people out. And as I help people out, sometimes I kind of enter into these spaces where they're going to. And so that sort of happened where I was doing a hypnosis session with someone with an intent to do a past life regression. And it could have been a past life regression. We weren't quite sure what it was, where she opened up to something and but then didn't want to talk about it afterwards. However, I ended up getting a new friend, which was this being called Andronicus. And I saw him seated, as you described, in a very, almost like a cell, a small area, like a prison cell. It looked like it was like cement, but maybe painted white or in a white tone. That was the walls were white, the ceiling was white, the floor was white, and he was wearing what looked like almost like a karate outfit, for a lack of better terms, you know, kind of a jacket that was crisscrossed. And he was seated, he was bald, could have been perceived as a monk, you know, in some, maybe in the human society. But he definitely looked different. His skin was much whiter than our skin tone is. Even, you know, some people that with a lighter skin tone, he was, you know, even whiter. And his eyes were dark. And he had a very round face, round head, and had these numbers floating around him. And some of them were on his head. And then I saw a barcode, or like a number signature, and I recognized that he was from a slave society, and we had a discussion, and he told me he had this incredible ability for telepathy, to the point where he was not only communicating in this expansion of time space throughout, you know, the universe, but also what I'm finding is he's kind of we're essentially way in the future from when this has happened. So and it was confusing. I was trying to understand the timelines when he was describing what was going on. And what he ultimately said to me was you know, that they were in prison, they knew that they were stuck here, but it was almost like communicating with us. He started to look into our field of experience, and it sort of awakened him, and he realized how to get out of the situation, awaken the others. Then they get free of this slave experience and free of these beings, which were reptilian of nature. And then having the ability to turn their society back to their original form in a form of time travel or reset, what he called it. It's like a reset, maybe not a button, but of some sort, that enabled them to take their planet and reset it and bring it back to its original form. And said he was from Andromeda. He said that very specifically. So I'm hearing from him. I'm like, all right, I'm not going to think about it. I'm not going to process it psychologically. I'm just going to write down what he's saying. See if there's any coherency to this. See if this, you know, after a while it will fizzle out. And that's what I thought, that, you know, yeah, you know, because you get these different ones that have come in and out and have spoken to me. Sometimes I speak to them once, sometimes it's multiple times. some of them have been with me all along. Some of them, you know, it's just been a seasonal thing, or when I'm dealing with specific people, certain beings arrive. I'll say it like that. But with Andronicus, it's been very intense. Every week I kind of sense him around, and I always say that, you know, I talk to him on Tuesday, so I don't know, it's like a scheduled thing, but sometimes it's all Monday, or, you know, I mean, it's just like right around that time. And, you know, and I'm able to ask him questions, and so these are questions that I'm curious about, and then before you know it, it's expanding into this incredible wisdom. And, you know, like today I was talking to him about Source, and the information that came through was just really phenomenal, and it wasn't anything that I had ever known. So what I said to JP, right, I said, I don't know what this is, maybe we can kind of do a run through. And I thought he had the perfect voice for Andronicus. Now, I don't really know the tone of Andronicus's voice. I don't hear him that way. I kind of hear and know what he's saying, but there is that calm wisdom that he has that I thought JP would have the perfect calm wisdom that suited the character of Andronicus. And so, you know, JP, you started to read through with me, and then I contacted you again, and I said, I have another one. And then I contacted you again. I said, it's still going. And I think we even at one point found that he said some kind of metal material was on the planet called Crentinium. And maybe that's, you know, it was just like all this like really unusual stuff. And what was really interesting is that I think, and this is my perspective, is JP, is it seems like it stimulated some of your thoughts. And then when we would do the show for 2 hours, and before you know it, it would spin off into other conversations that maybe needed to be unfolding live on air. And as we did that, other topics would come up, and I felt like it was cathartic in some ways, spiritually cathartic. I felt like it covered a lot of different areas that we hadn't thought about, but maybe what were necessary. And even then you started talking about some of the inventions that started to come up around that time. And I don't know if there was a parallel or, you know, inspiration from all of this that created that. I don't know, but it did seem to happen around the same time. So,
yes.
I don't know. I mean, tell me what you think.
Well, there's so much cross-pollination, we can call it, in... the way it's been almost for me is like a weekly episode of like a kind of real life interactive Star Trek audio thing. And, you know, you come up and it comes out about 4 pages, which is like a chapter.
Yes.
And it's like a chapter of a story that is interacting in some bizarre way with our own world. Things that he talks about occur in our world. The names are different. The energy is the same. You know, and now he started talking about our planet and his interaction with people from our planet, and time travel. And as you said, the holographic reset of an entire planet. So you understand what that means, people. It's like, yeah, they may frack the hell out of the world, but we can reverse it. Because I don't know if anybody's aware of Alex Collier has been talking about the Andromedans have this machine. It's like a holographic camera. It takes a photo of you, and then you can wind it back through the years till you were healthy again. And then they apply that hologram to you, and you're reset. And so,
and see, I didn't
that's
know anything
that on
about
a,
Alex, that's, Collier's work.
Yeah, that's that on a you know, a larger scale, but that's the same principle. And, you know, as of course it's, you know, it's a holographic omniverse. then that's the way it's going to work. So it's a fascinating thing, you know, that even though we may think that we're on the brink of breaking the planet, there is a way that, you know, what they call them, a third level society? Oh God, I can't remember. There's a particular coding of levels of society that, you know, some people can, you know, terraform you know, a country, some can terraform a planet, some can terraform a solar system, you know. Type 3 civilization, that's what they're talking about. Type 3 civilization is somebody that, people that can move stars around and can probably do this holographic planetary reset. So that's what they did with their Andromedan planet. They reset the thing till back before the reptilian overlords came. So carry on, Jeff.
Yeah, and they have a few different attributes that I thought were interesting. One is they're very mindful of plant life. And I would not be surprised if they were influential on the development and growth of their contribution as a society, the development and growth of, you know, our agricultural knowledge. There are many species that they discuss and interact with, and each one, you know, contributes something. But it's kind of a little humorous at times in how that Andronicus gets annoyed because of some of their differences and behaviors.
Hey, Jess.
Yeah.
You just named him. We've forgotten to name him.
Who?
Andronicus.
Yeah, no, I said it was Andronicus earlier.
Did you? No. All right. So because I'd forgotten to introduce him, and that's the thing, you know. But yes, his name is Andronicus. He's called himself, and it's like it's almost like he's declaring himself as the galactic human.
You know? He is. He calls himself. He said that his culture is like our cousins. That they're. And also, they seem to be our caretakers in some way, watching over us. And, you know, like I think early on, if you listen to the earlier transmissions, the Andromedan Strain, which is a movie, there were quite a few movies that had this type of society. And it was their impression that they were sending to us telepathically, not so much that was our future, but that was their past, or that was their experience at the time that it was being sent to us. So by the time we received the information, it already had passed and gone. But we were thinking that this is our future and it's not necessarily so. And I think that was important for him to share that with us, is to not be dreadful about what's ahead of us, but to be more hopeful. And there's a lot of things that he says that are very, I find very encouraging. And also to show that, you know, the struggles that he had is the same type of struggles that we have. And, you know, as we have different cultures and different families that developed into, states and nations and borders, he had to deal with these different species. His work was to go to these outposts. And when they went to the outposts, these other species were either there or some would arrive afterwards. And one of them being is the Vinkala. He calls them the Vinkala, which are the reptilian race. And the lizard type of race he calls a Sleetaran. And some people had mentioned that the Sleestak or something from was another show. I forget what
the Slytherin? Was. From Harry Potter, it has this slippery, slithery sort of sound to it, the Sleetaran, and they're like, you know, there are many different kinds of reptile, and you know, you have crocodiles, and you have quetzalcoatls. Oh God, I've forgotten the names of them. Geckos, and you know, all these different chameleons. They're all different levels of reptile, and they're not all. They're not all like the Komodo dragon, you know, which is they're not all testosterone, which is basically their problem, You know, I was talking about this with Noreen just now. You know, it's the center of the brain that they've wiggled their way in, and that can control everybody right from the base center. So you've got to master the base center, establish a base. So there we are. We've got the Vinkala, and they're kind of on the run now from the Andromedans.
So they're also like moving ahead, and they get into the human. They go into the future before anyone else does. Start messing things up.
And of course, what we got to realize is that you're first meeting Andronicus from a long, long time ago. I mean, right. It's all like maybe hundreds of thousands of years, maybe even millions of years ago. Because time is an illusion, folks, as we all keep talking about. And it's possible to do this sort of stuff. It's possible to have instant communication anywhere, anywhen, with anyone. You just have to believe that you can. That's all it takes. You have to have a chutzpah, you know, that you can do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you just don't think about it. It's sort of like, you know that, all right, this is not happening exactly right now. And then you start getting into this space, and you see that time space is, I don't know, somehow like a folder system, you know, just like pages and kind of like the dimensions or whatever. They look like pages to me. And, you know, I've seen, Shiva almost moving in and out of those pages. It's really cool. You know, just kind of, he can jump through those dimensions, but he also kind of passes through them, just kind of lightly like floats through each page. And that's, I guess it might have been symbolic how he was showing me that, but, they're, you know, the dimensions are like veils, you know, so if someone is seeing through, they always say that, you know, the mediums, they see through the veils. Well, yeah, I mean, it's almost like you lift the veil and now you're in that space and this space at the same time. And, but although there is a difference, you know, because there's a separation, but you just can't see it. So, the time space is in the same way. So you're looking through this time space, not necessarily like a portal, although you may see a portal. You may see something that has this circular, appearance, and it's kind of has a distortion illusion, which, that circular essence would have. But for the most part, you know, when you're stepping through those dimensions, you don't have to go through a portal to see it. But anyhow, so the time space thing is not, it's not anything that you think about, although you know it at the moment when it is, sort of, maybe not on a calendar, but, kind of an estimated time, like, you know, human history, or, you know, you kind of have an essence of an idea. And also by what he is saying, I'm asking him, where are you now? And where are we? You know, and so he's kind of showing me, and then I'm seeing that he, you know, at times he's jumping around. So it seems very simple for him to move into this space, whereas we have to see things much more in a linear way where it starts to make sense.
I think that what we're doing is transdimensional, and that what he's going into a kind of hyperspace place. Where he, you know, you can go anywhere, anywhen. This is the kind of energy that we've been, that takes, you know, we've been going across this energy line of, you know, stepping out of the third dimension into another dimension, then back into another place and time. As if it was just like tuning into an internet website.
Well, you know, he even talks about time travel, and that piece was really interesting to me because, you know, it's very appealing. People, you know, how many people have fantasized, well, I'd love to be a time traveler. And one thing he did say is he says the Andromedans can go through time, but they usually go through time as observers, not really as strong participants, and I think that's the key. And I said, and then he, he probably sensed that I was like, wow, that would be really fascinating. And he kind of forewarned me and said, if and the type of stuff we're talking about is him moving through time and space and being able to see things, and is different from going through a time traveling linear timeline. I'm trying to explain it because it actually is different, because those that are traveling through space are not necessarily time traveling, right? You see what I'm saying, JP?
Yes. I mean, okay. It's dimensional. I mean, there's so many. There's dimensions that we have in this universe, and then there is different universes. You know, it's like the next. It's like the galaxies of galaxies. It's like the next level up.
Right, and if we were to get in a spacecraft, we would experience more of what Andromeda is experiencing, or Andronicus is experiencing. Of where that, you know, this and the other species are when they're traveling to other planets. But what if we go to the human timelines? That's the time travel that I'm talking about, is where you're stepping into the 1840s or the, you know, the time of Christ, or, you know, something like that. And he forewarned me. He said that wherever you were born, in whatever timeline you were born, if you were moving into another timeline, another place in time, you can't really stay there, he said, because it, he said that there, it's almost like a Xerox or a print of you, and your soul is not fulfilling what it's supposed to do in the organic place where you were born. So you throw things off. You're not actually following through with your soul's purpose. So, and unless we're away from this human experience and this system, then maybe it would be different. But even he told me that he does not come into our, doesn't time travel and kind of get involved. He said, but others have, the Vinkala have, or what the reptilians have, which is why they got into problems and why it interfered and bothered, you know, or disrupted some of the human experience. And they're not the only ones that have done this. And every time that something like this does happen, we have something that's kind of greater than what we know how to handle, like some of the world wars. You know, I know that the World War II in particular was, there actually needed to be an intervention to prevent this overthrow of, or this one world order type of thing that was trying to come in, and that was a species that was trying to dominate the entire planet, and so there was that kind of disruption. We can't have this, and so it's almost like they're kind of policing in a way, making sure that the humans are not overrun in some way by this, you know, full control system. So at least it's nice to know that we have that sort of safeguard, but it kind of does like play its way out a little bit in some way, until we start saying, hey, we don't want this, we don't want it, you know, and then it's like, you know, the things start to change in another direction, because our will is incredibly strong. And even though whatever comes into, whatever type of species comes into our human existence, if our will chooses not to embrace it, we do have, I believe we can overpower it by intention. And because our because we still in many ways, and probably always have, a strong force, regarding our intention. And because this is our planet, this was given to us, by source. And so I think we do have the strongest persuasion. You know, if that makes any sense.
Well, if we align ourselves with the planet, then we're mm-hmm. the strongest of all, because we're working with the grain. You know, we're working, instead of trying to struggle against things, we're cooperating with things, and it's so much easier. It's more fun, and you know, you're on the right side. It just is very simple. So
it's like eliminating fear.
Yeah. Yes.
Getting out of the mode of fear. Everyone's afraid of the extraterrestrials. Some of them are benevolent. They're really here to help us. Some of them, maybe they're not benevolent, but are intriguing. Could be, you know, maybe have mislead us. But they are interesting either way. And some of them are just, you know, they're of the contrast, they call it. They're of the contrast. They're malevolent in a way. They're here to, you know, create a contrast of experiences, because some humans do want to experience some of these contrasts. And that's still here again. It's the human will that comes into play, and Source allows certain things to a certain degree. Of course, we're all responsible for ourselves. No one here to blame. But it's all very, very interesting.
Indeed. And let's talk about some of the creatures that this guy's met. I mean, and first of all, let's talk about the guy himself, right? So,
okay. We
first meet Andronicus, and he's a prisoner, and he's like pretty hopeless at the beginning, but like realizes that once he makes contact, things rapidly change. It's almost like, you know, he was touched by an angel from his perspective, and that gave him such strength. So what happens is we see the transformation of this being from someone who was very passive at the beginning. And this is the whole thing about them. They, you know, they didn't have very much emotion. And they, you know, they're a bit, all right, you know, whatever you want. Kind of very, very in service. Too servile for their own good. And what this whole episode has given them, because of course this is a hero's journey for Andronicus, is his transformation, because he has to then actually deal with, you know, and it's like in Star Trek when he's just, you know, we've just made friends with the Klingons, and the Romulans are like, we start to understand them at least, you know, they're still hostile, but we get the idea. And you know, we've now got the, you know, the exchange students and stuff like that with the Klingons, and so we have this. They get a handle on the Vinkala, the reptilian force, and are now kind of chasing them back towards Earth to try and stop them, you know, wreaking havoc elsewhere, because. Mm-hmm. I think that they would they be the tall whites? They're kind of a tall white reptilian race, aren't they?
They seem like regular reptilian, maybe greenish, brownish. I just had a quick glimpse of them, but I know what you're talking about. But the ones that I saw might have been gray, green, brown variations. Kind of like a real reptile looking, like whether it's a lizard or, you know, having almost those colors in them.
Mm-hmm. And are their faces, you know, really out and out snouty or more humanoid? Do they have noses and mouths and things like that? Or just kind of, or are they more like the snouty, you know, orange eyes with the slits and stuff?
Yeah, more like that. And their bodies, though, looked more humanoid. So it's almost like their face was reptilian-like.
All right, so it's like a reptile head on a humanoid body. This is what we're meeting at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, the skin is definitely of a different color. You know, it's, you know, got the striations and lines and everything that the reptiles have, and kind of that rough skin.
And the thing about these guys, though, Jess, is that they appear to be, you know, you know, kind of innocent and stuff, but they realize that they have this kind of mind control thing going on.
Yeah, we attribute it to like the Scalar technology that's available now. It's a sort of that what they were doing is it was an underlay of some kind of humming tone or something that was sort of getting into, it was like going in through the back door. So they were interacting with the Andromedans, and the Andromedans are essentially passive. And it's not that they were emotionless; it was just that they were almost like innocent. And so they you know, were more calculating and more not calculating, like planning in a bad negative way, but more of, you know, oh, that doesn't make any sense. It's not logical. It's sort of like the Spock type of thing from like Star Trek.
Yeah,
they were just sort of logical and some of these emotions didn't really have any purpose, or they hadn't evolved into that, and it was more of just kind of interpreting it, and, you know, well, you know, when you're growing these plants, you know, it should come up to about this many inches, and, you know, it was more like they were just examining, I'd say, sort of like scientists in a way. So they were sort of passive and just observing everything and listening, and so here's the Vinkala show up, and they're talking in a normal tone, but there's this sound, you know, in the background. It's kind of this white noise I was picking up, and the sound came in. It started to have subliminal, or has said some kind of messaging. And then before you know it, they were through a back door. They became subservient and started following orders. And at one point, you know, Andronicus recognizes what's going on. He tries everything to break free of it and isolates himself and gets deeply into what, you know, would be like this meditative state, which to me almost looks like he was in a peaceful protest. And so that's how the Vinkala moved. And so then we started examining what's going on our planet right now, and where did this scalar technology and this whole mind control concept come from? Well, it was introduced by the Vinkala, or the reptilians. They brought this technology with them, and it was a method and a way to control things, because that's what they like to do. They control each other, and then they want to control everything else around them. So it's part of their attributes and just kind of their makeup. It's, when you think about it, a lot of animals, like, you know, even the wolf is in a pack, and they expect this level of obedience. So it's kind of, if you look at it that way, that was, you know, probably what was going on with them, genetically. But, you know, then it got to a bigger problem.
Yeah. Well, it turned into a dominant hive mind kind, yes, of situation almost. And what's interesting about the Vinkala is, like, they seem to be a carrier of this mind virus, much like in Stargate, the beings, the humanoid beings, had this entity inside them that made their eyes glow, for a start. You know, they would light up their pineal gland, basically. It would make the whites of their eyes glow, and it would give them super psychic powers, but it was basically controlling the body from the brainstem.
And Dune had the same thing.
Yes,
where their eyes were turned blue. You remember in Dune?
Ah, now that's the spice, and that's
the spice did it. Yeah, yes, but the same thing. It was like a control.
That's right. Now, and here we're going to go to something that is now on this planet, which is what we call the black goo.
Mm-hmm.
And this then connects with the black stone, or Schwarze Stein, which is the German SS. That's what SS stood for. Schwarze Stein, okay, which means black stone, which means black goo. It was the black stone that they extracted the black goo from, that then infected all the Nazis and gives them that mind control, hive mind, Nazi kind of thing.
So that brings us to the other species that Andronicus deals with. So he first deals with what he called the Vinkala, and I had to figure it out that they were the reptilians, because I figured it out because that's what they look like. And then this other species shows up after we'll get back to you. There's a path that they go through that introduces them to these species, and one was a sector after they leave Andromeda, they go to Sector 438, and I'm not sure where that is. But there they find the Mars beings are there. But then there's the other being that they find on the blue planet Zephron, they called it. And those were the Ketrons. And what I found out afterwards is the Ketrons were the Titans. And they also had sort of a controlling way about them, but it was different from the Vinkala. I'm trying to.
Well, when we first met I'm going to pronounce it slightly different as I've been talking about, because I think there's something connected here with the Ketrons. right? Because we come across these Ketrons, and they're like a he says they're like a larger cousin of the Vinkala, but they're not the same.
They look very human.
Yeah. So
those are the large whites, maybe that you were looking for, are the Titans.
Yeah, so the tall whites or the Titans, and the names that are starting to appear are starting to sound very familiar as what we call the Titans of old, right? So we could say that, you know, yes, that Andronicus is talking to us from a period that we know beyond our classical period. And back to the time when the stories that arose in the classical period actually happened, like the story of Gilgamesh and all of these things. And so Andronicus is starting to meet these people, right? And it's fascinating. I mean, how fascinating is it, Spock?
Fascinating.
Oh, come on, say it again.
Fascinating.
Yeah, that's how fascinating it is. Because he starts talking about various names, and these are names that start to sound familiar. And there was one, and this is before we met the Ketronians, I think, or the Ketrons, that we met a female, and they called her a queen. Because I believe that the reptilians call all females queens. Mm. In the same way that we call a female cat a queen, and we call a female dog a bitch, okay, that you would call a human female a queen. You see?
Mm-hmm.
You call a bovine female, you call that a cow, and you call a bovine male a bull. You know, it's just a name, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Not a rank. I'm not sure, but who knows, because it might come back that way. But do you want to talk about the human female and what her journey was? Because it was pretty terrifying.
Well, what the journey went from Andromeda, you know, in this really state of catastrophe. It looked like the planet was burnt and had a lot of issues, and all the vegetation was dying. Then they did the reset. Once that Andronicus and his crew members knew that everything was okay, they had to start going to other outposts and collect some of their people. And one of them was Sector 438. So they go to Sector 438. They see that planet was also had, you know, quite a bit of destruction, but they end up getting their people free and take them along, and then they end up in the blue planet Saffron. And on the blue planet Saffron, they find these species. One was the Ketrons, they called them at first, and then they turned the name change to the Ketritons. And you can see where this is going. So you've got Triton and Tron. And of course, you know, Kronos comes up later, and we realize that Kronos is involved from more of a distance. And then Prometheus also shows up at some point, because after they leave the planet Zephron, they go on to their next outpost, which is heading to, they call it, it's really Saturn, but they're calling it Satar. And so all of these, you know, this stuff unfolds. But so the primary characters that show up on Zephron are really the players that we've seen so far is the Titans, and then the Mars planet beings, which they call the Lucido. And I don't know why he calls them Lucido. And I think there's another species on Mars they called the Vonita. And there might even have been a third species there. But the Lucido particularly are like scientists, and they're always mixing and making stuff, and they also can step into black holes, which is none of the other species seem to be able to do that. But they're smaller in size. They're maybe either more dense in size or maybe about 3 to 4 feet, I would say. Whereas, you know, the Titans are really large. They're more giant, and I think they were even scaled down so that they can interact with the Andromedans, who the Andromedans might be a taller version of us. And so you have, you know, the Titans, which is the Ketrons, the Andromedans, the Mars beings, which are the Lucido, are there, and then the Sleetaran, which are the lizard beings, and then there are the Aldebarans, the beings from Aldebaran, and they are females. And those were the queens that we talked about.
The Aldebaran queens. Tell us about them.
Well, they show up at some point where, it starts off, but we'll get back to you now. We're going to set the stage now. So the Vinkala come to Zephron, the blue planet Zephron. They go there, and then the Vegas are there. The Vegas are sort of the overseers there, Shiva and some of the others. There's some others there, and one of them is Gupta, right? That sort of like a teacher to the Andromedans. It's kind of, they're benevolent. Whenever all the species are around, they kind of keep order of everything. It's almost like they're not partial toward any, but if one of them is not doing what they're supposed to do, then they kind of remind them if their time is up and they have to leave. And so the Vegas asked the Vinkala to leave because they weren't behaving. And they kind of, the Andromedans sort of kind of take control of Zephron, not by force, but because they're similar to the Vegas in a sense that they're sensible and they're overseeing everything. And as they're overseeing everything, they are curious about what happened to the Vinkala. I mean, they're a little fascinated by them. They were dominated by them for so long that they kind of want to keep an eye on them. They don't trust them. So they go over to their camp and they come up to this space where they hear a woman's voice. Now, the Andromedans don't have their females there, or at least, you know, those, their mates. They don't have anyone there with them at that time. And so, you know, they're hearing a female voice, they're curious of what's going on. And so they go over and they see this hole, and they go down this winding staircase and go in, and they see this woman who's tied up, looks like she has been abused, and claims that she is a queen from Sumer. And so somehow the word, it's almost like the French word ami or amis. A-M-I, so he calls her Sumer Amis. And then I started thinking, I'm saying, wow, that name sounds familiar. And it was Semiramis. I realized that he was talking about Semiramis. And he said that she was a queen and that she went in and then she came back out again. And, so she was in the other dimensional space. Well, what they did was they rescued her and they pulled her up. But what they didn't realize is when they were rescuing her, they were actually pulling her out of the timeline. So then, at some point, they bring her back. All the species on the planet said that you threw off the whole timeline and it interfered and caused an imbalance. So he was asked to return Sumer back into the portal, because apparently it was a portal. He thought she was just in the Earth. He didn't realize he was pulling her out of a portal in a timeline.
So what it seemed to do, Jess, they seemed to discover basically like a Stargate room, and they could see her on the other side. Now, here's the thing. How was it that she was appearing in this Stargate? How did that happen? You know, because that doesn't normally happen, does it?
No, the Vinkala put her there. The Vinkala had captured her, but they were going into, but probably her and many others that they were taking in and out of the timelines. And that could explain why some of these people were referred to as deities, because they would leave and then return. And I also believe she was the same as Ishtar. It was the same thing. And the story of Ishtar is that she was brought, she went into another, like in the underworld, and then she died, and then she came back to life again. And that's sort of what happened with, Sumer. They brought her in. It looked like, might have looked like she died, and then here she reappears in, you know, like almost like she had, you know, came back to life. And I believe that's happened. Some even speculate that happened with Christ. And excuse me if anyone is offended by that, but it's just another theory that Jesus maybe didn't die. He stepped into a timeline and just came back. And, or some variation of that. So, you know, that there are, with the, reptilians, and what I'm seeing is that they were jumping into the timelines and all, trying to alter certain things, and particularly by taking humans out and then putting them back in maybe wrong places, or, making them appear as deities, which, you know, they're essentially humans. So,
so something is, something goes on when you, have time traveled.
Mm-hmm.
You develop a level of consciousness that is, well, I think, you know, it's, it changes your dimension. I remember William Stillings, a real time traveler, saying right. that going through the jump room, which is the gateway to Mars, was now what was the word he used? Calibrating experience. Mm. Which is an interesting thing to say. But it's like,
sure.
I imagine that what he's meaning by that is that it puts things into perspective and leaves your stuff behind. You know, that which is you gets teleported, and that which isn't you is no longer there. You know, mm-hmm. when you use a teleport machine, it kind of cleanses you of the bugs. That's an interesting concept. But what happens if there's so much bug on the other end?
Right.
But that stuff still remains. You probably have to shoot it.
Well, like that other movie, right? You find yourself and...
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Loopers, and there's the other one, which was The Prestige, mm-hmm. where Tesla, played by David Bowie, developed a teleport which replicated himself, so he had to kill... he had to actually kill a version of himself and then appear, ta-da, on the other side. That's The Prestige. Yeah. Ta-da! Anywho, so time travel and Semiramis and dimensional travel, that the idea that she was to... she would disappear at one point and everybody thought she was dead or something, and then she appeared somewhere else and her legend continued, and that became a mystery, and the mystery can easily be kind of explained by the use of time travel, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I had no idea where this was going, and when he called her Sumer, it was because she referred to the land, or like the Sumerians, you know, this was where I'm from, but he thought that was her name. And you know how that always gets confused. But there is this relationship that develops between them, which is something that wasn't intended to happen either, because she was of a different species. And, there was a romantic interlude that occurs, and then soon after, they're asking her to leave, and now he has this emotion that he didn't know existed. And the fact that he is absent of her, and he longs for her. There was a connection in between, and so, you're seeing that as time goes on, and as these transmissions come through, that he's having emotions, and then he starts to develop this kind of philosophical view of his life and space and everything else around him. It's like we're getting to watch him evolve.
And we're seeing him evolve, but without the suppression of emotions, but by the experience of going through emotions that at some time feel like they're going to destroy him. You know, mm-hmm. we get all the drama of that, and we get this very calm voice describing these possibly terrifying or traumatic situations that he's going through, and he learns how to make hard decisions. You know, as I said, it's just like a TV series, and so one of the reasons that they wanted Sumeramis to leave was you know, they all felt the disturbance and the force of the whole thing. And this is the key to the transmission, is that there's like this trans-dimensional relationship going on that, you know, like Doctor Who and his TARDIS works across time and space. Anyway, we'll be back at the on the other side of the top of this hour with some fascinating stuff, and maybe we'll accept that phone call who's been calling all the way through. Don't go away, don't go away.
Fascinating.
Yes, indeed, it is fascinating. And rather than Vulcan, we'll be dealing with the Vulcans next, actually, probably, on Muggsy's show on Wall Street Radio. We had them, you know, I had Ray Kusalandich last night, who's quite, he's apparently a third-generation contactee, and he's been contacting, like, 34 races. And you know there's a lot of cross-pollination, so it might be interesting to run this one by him, because there's a lot of you know, a lot of people's stories. Everybody's got their own universe, and these universes are intersecting right now. Almost every universe is intersecting with every other, and we're beginning to see what people mean by parallel, or maybe not parallel, how about angular dimensions? You know, instead of it being a parallel space, it's like it's just another 5 degrees away. You know, yes. Like you turn a dial on the radio.
That's more like it.
Yeah, so it's a vector, it's a direction. And then, you know, people talk about, you know, finding direction in life and things like that. It always works that way. So, Jess, we're back. I'm back with Jessica Morocco. This is Journeys with JP on Revolution Radio, the 115% listener-supported site, as in we need your donations. I'm also part of Wolf Spirit Radio Wolf Pack, the Wolf Spirit Media Network, which includes now wolfspirit.tv. If you're a fan at all of Alex Collier, and you didn't manage to make it live to the first two webinars, we're going to have another webinar on Friday at 11 PST. What's that? That's 2 Eastern and 7 PM UK time. So it's quite accessible. And that's where you can actually get to ask him a question, because people send me, I have to say, please, stop sending me questions for Alex. Stop sending me questions for Simon. The only time you get to you get me to put a question to these guests is during the show. The rest of the time, I have to run a radio station, and I have a life as well. So I don't spend my time talking to all these guests and asking them questions on everybody's behalf. Please, I don't do that. It's impossible, you know. So, if you want to come along to the webinar. It doesn't cost much, and it raises money for Alex. And what you get is the opportunity to ask that question, because his time is precious, like yours is. So exchange some of that, and, you know, find some higher wisdom reflected in his words. So that's on Friday. Come to alexcollier.org or wolfspiritradio.com. /listen and just click the Alex Collier banner, and you see it'll take you along the process. As I said, it's very cheap. It's and it's a benefit gig. It's for Alex. He's been living in a Land Rover. Do you know what a Land Rover is? It's a little truck like a Isuzu, you know, Trooper, Suzuki. I don't know. Anyway, one of those. He's been living in one of those. He's had cancer. And everybody loves him, and, you know, nobody helps him. So we've decided James Harkin, who is an angel on this planet, and I have arranged some gigs for him, benefit gigs. So come along, and you can ask questions there and support him. We don't get a penny, James and I, not for these ones anyway. We're going to do some more. We're going to do some paid gigs. You know, it'll be a slightly more deep interaction that you have with the host and with the guest. So to that end, here we are, back in Andromeda.
Oh, cool. I like that. Well, I do want to add that Alex Collier is a fellow Andromedan who's, you know, it's just another extension of that suffering that they went through. And I would highly recommend anyone that's a follower of Andronicus to support Alex and help him through that. It's a difficult thing he's going through right now.
Absolutely. So, you know, we haven't, I don't know, he might come in at some point in the history of this thing. But, I'm not even sure if we're that far back with it, you know,
He might be from, we try to figure it out, and I haven't come across, and I've kind of, hinted to Andronicus and said, where does Alex Collier come in? And I almost felt like he was he was with another group on another journey, another group of Andromedans that were separate, and maybe at some point that they intersect. But it seems like they're journeyers, you know, they're out there, they're kind of, working for the universe, and part of that is in this traveling state where they're going from these different outposts and learning and kind of intermingling with the other species. So I kind of have gotten the feeling that that Alex Collier was not exposed to Andronicus, but maybe he was. I mean, maybe I haven't even talked to him about it, you know, and I don't think you have yet either. I don't know.
One of the things is that what I wanted to do was to kind of gather the whole thing together in a document. I thought it was only going to be about five, you know. I thought it was going to be about five or six little messages,
so
and then it would end, and you know. But now we're on episode 20, and it's looking like a mini series. It's looking longer than a mini series. It's looking like an entire season. And it's kind of writing itself as a chapter. You know, we could probably give this to a screenwriter who would make a fantastic adventure. And this is the thing that Alex was talking about right away, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. We were talking about him in some unpublished interviews because they were for a book that he's written. And he said that if he ever wanted, you know, if he ever had the idea of starting over again, that instead of going out and saying, hello, I'm an Andromedan contactee, and wait for the shit to fly, what he would rather do is to actually write a book that was a story, like a science fiction story. And that's what he did, and it's called Captain Dinar, you know, The Adventures of Captain Dinar. And we recorded these a couple of years ago, and I was very inspired at the time, and I made a little theme tune, and it's a cheesy little science fiction theme tune. I don't even presume that he's ever going to use it, but that's the tune that I've been using for the interviews that I've done with him and for the webinars.
Okay.
So the music that you hear at the beginning of this thing is the theme tune for this non-manifest science fiction show, which is The Adventures of Captain Dinar. Now, The Adventures of Andronicus is a whole other series, you know.
That should have its own theme tune then.
Yeah, so maybe we should, you know,
I think it should be like very, very like tone related, you know what I mean?
Yes, very, very monastic.
Yeah. Oh, maybe not. But yeah, there's definitely this kind of out of space kind of thing. Yeah, and it could be sort of maybe a little bit lighter, you know, and maybe more spacey sounding.
Yeah. Kind of. Hey, more like this. Hang on. Let's see if I can. One of these. Some of that?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe a little bit of that.
That's Star Trek Voyager, which has Catherine Janeway as a female captain of a Federation starship that gets flung into basically it gets thrown through a black hole across the other side of the galaxy. far, far, far away. Far further than warp drive. You know, warp drive appears only to be able to take you across, you know, a different sector of a galaxy.
Yeah, so, it sounds like you're helped by the Mars beings.
Mm. So here's the thing. The Andromedans are, and it's something that he said, they're very up on measurements. And every time he's given us a communication, there's been this code number that comes with
right.
them. You know, and I think maybe we should have that at the top of each chapter, because that's like Captain's Log, Stardate 25, 74, 36, you know. This could work. We'll think about it. I'll think about it.
I think in the beginning you were looking at those numbers and you looked it up on Google Space, and it actually came to a location. This is kind of the bizarre stuff that was happening as the transmissions would unfold. Then we would have these like really weird moments where we would say, all right, now, so that came up at, you know, this is the location in space where it came up at. And actually he says, you said Tolek said that that's where the Andromedans were. And you said, you know, Tolek. And I said, no, I never heard of Tolek. And so it was just like one of those weird moments where we were seeing some agreement on what someone else had said before about, you know, the Andromedans. And now, more recently, we had a woman contact us. I don't know if we should say her name or not. Should we have permission? Their name is Lisa. I'll say it like that. And she contacted us recently because we were talking about the Titans, and then I mentioned Zeus, and she asked if we had known this gentleman who talked about being an incarnated Titan.
And I thought,
I didn't know who he was.
I didn't know who he was. I'd heard this guy's name, but in a completely different context.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead.
She put the dots together, and yeah, she said, well, you said this, and he said this, and now neither one of us had communicated. I didn't know anything about what he had talked about, but apparently we're having these little, like, you know, oh, really? That's interesting, you know, that someone else is saying the same thing, but we had never talked or communicated to them. So, it's kind of, for me, it feels like a nice little validation and encouraging me that some of these, you know, these things, from my perspective, did in fact happen. But, you know, of course, that's my perspective. You know, there's no fact and there's no ability to prove it, but it does seem kind of odd that we're seeing this coinciding pieces of information that kind of validate what we're talking about. And we're like, wow, this just sounds like some, you know, science fiction story, and yet others are saying the same thing, so...
Yeah, it's a bit like one of these. Sorry, it's a bit like one of these three-dimensional puzzles that you have to. You can only solve if you think fourth-dimensionally. You know, you have mm-hmm. to keep looking from a higher perspective on the unfolding of these things and how they are all the truth. They're all aspects. They're all fragmented aspects of the truth. And what we're experiencing is the reintegration of those fragments. And as we heal each other, we mm-hmm. reintegrate fragments of ourselves, things that, parts that were shattered during trauma. And we bring them together and we become healed. And that heals the whole of us as well. And there's part of the story is unfolding is that these people we call gods or titans or the idea of we saw the film in Prometheus where the guy drinks the juice and dissolves into the rivers so that then he seeds the planet. So his DNA mm-hmm. then connecting with the matrix of the planet produces the race of whatever becomes the human race or whatever. So the human race is known as the children of Prometheus. But the idea that is the journey of the source. It's, you know, the journey of the fool through the tarot deck, like we were talking about in the last show. That prime, is it? Now, he came in as Teos
Primus
Teos. As Teos Prime or Primo Teos.
Right? Primus Teos.
Primus Teos, which means first creator. Yeah? Mm. You know? They talk about a Teos, you know?
So then it was Primus Teos, which evolved into Prometheus.
Yes.
Yeah, and what's really weird is I'm seeing like the earlier name, and then I said, "Oh, that sounds like," and that's what it was. You know, it was like Sumeramis, which was Semiramis, is the later writing about it. Same with Primus Teos, which was Prometheus. You know, that it evolved into that, and Ketron, which turned out to be Tron later on, and Ketriton, which was Triton. And there was another one too that
so,
had
hang on
evolution.
A second, because Tron is now Metatron, is that right?
It's also Metatron.
It's also
yes.
Metatron. So, you know, it's like
you asked me and then I asked him and he verified that. Yes.
And so this is the thing. It's like we hear these names and a lot of them, it's like they're almost like like prime minister or something like that, or president. It's an office or a state of beingness, like master or something like that. We use words that confuse us with personalities, and so it may be possible that maybe many beings are called Primus Deus, or Prime Creator, or representative of the Source, number one on this place, on this plane. You know, it's like it's not the name of someone; it's a position of something, of someone.
Well, the Primus seemed to be the name that they had. Now that the Ketrons or the Ketritons. So they become the Ketritons after a battle between Ketron and Ketriton. They're brothers. And Ketriton actually cut off the arm of Ketron at one point. But their arms grow back, apparently. But they're just like very, very like aggressive. Very, you know, just as the story of the Titans were, you're just very physical. And also, you know, they're about, you know, who gains control, and so whoever gains control then takes the name over. So at some point there'll be a Titan, you know, so the name Titan somehow takes the higher level, and then everyone takes on the name, so that's what their group becomes. This is the way they were explaining it to me. So at some point then there's this one that's very disruptive, and his name is Borkum, but they end up calling Andronicus really doesn't like him because he's very obnoxious and very loud, and so they call him Borkum. He calls him Borkum.
Because he's barking around, and he's I can imagine like a kind of rhinoceros type fellow.
Yeah, just constantly, you know, saying things loud and boisterous. And so what I'm starting to see is there's this levels of command. So Borkum is like of the lower command, but the ones with the K-E or the you know, the Ketron, Ketriton, you know, K-E sounding before the name. There's also Kraton that shows up later. And these are the ones that are sort of like siblings. I don't know if they're siblings and related to Kronos, who is then like their overseer, their father. And then there is the, Prometheus, which is like a commander. And then there are other commanders. The commanders seem to have a higher ability. So at some point, they all have to depart from the planet Zephron. Zephron ends up getting polluted in some problems, which we think are the Mars beings that seem to have a trail of, you know, indiscretions that they do on each planet, because they're like scientists and they're experimenting, and then they alter the field and the chemistry of the field. And not deliberately, but I think they're sort of kind of haphazard in a way. And
they're like Werner Eckert. They're Nazi scientists, basically.
Yeah.
They don't care. They don't care about people or the heart. They're just mind people. That's their thing.
Yeah. And then they go through black holes. And like I said, they're small, but they're kind of, don't underestimate them. You know, they're very smart, and they, you know, they build cities. They use the ability to, potentially they could have been the ones that created our pyramids, or the anti-gravity. You know, they have the ability to use anti-gravity, and they can move things. So they don't need their physical strength, whereas the Tritons are, you know, the Titans are pretty strong, physically, and they're giants. So at some point, before the planet Zephron gets destroyed, we talked about this earlier about the queen, which was Sumer, Amis being there, and then she having to leave, and then at some point there's the visitors from Aldebaran and their queens. And, I said, what's the name of the head queen? And they said, Sharia. And I said, Sharia. And it was, like SHE-REE-YA. Sharia. Something like that. So I tried to, you know, phonetically put it together, and, she was very demanding. She wanted to be worshipped. She saw herself as a queen. You know, it was very much like the priestesses of Dune.
Oh, the Bene Gesserit.
Bene Gesserit.
So that's their character. They're very controlling.
Yeah.
And they again used that voice. They used sonic control,
right,
didn't they?
They did, and so there's that attitude, and the Mars beings were very subservient to them as well, and then they started to bring in the Sitaran to assist them, and they were building city or buildings for the Aldebaran, and Andronicus doesn't understand what's going on. He knows that there's some activity going on, and at the same time they make sure he gets rid of his girlfriend, Sumer, and then now the Aldebarans come in, and they're saying, essentially, we're taking over. And it's these priestesses, like the Bene Gesserit. And so the Ketrons, they don't like it. The Titans, they don't like it, right? And as well as the Andromedans don't like it. But the Sleetaran and the Mars beings of Lucido, they kind of are subservient in helping them already. They're already under their control. And, so the Ketrons and the Andromedans, you know, disagree with them, and then they end up leaving. The Aldebarans leave. But then they see that there's a problem on the planet, and so they all have to get on a craft. Now the Aldebarans actually take, the Titan craft from them. And, so that although it seems like it might have had a higher design, you know, where the Titans end up having to spend time with the Andromedans, and they have to be on their ship.
And that that moment is very reminiscent of the time when in Star Trek they first kind of came on board with the Klingons.
Yeah.
And the character of the Tritons is kind of like the Klingons. They're like bikers, aren't they? They're like, you know, it's like,
yeah.
You know, all this all the time.
But they don't want to go into hypersleep.
That's right. They don't trust
anyone.
All they want
to do is their battle games on the ship, and they start getting into it with the Andromedans, and start to pull some of the Andromedans into their war games. You know, it's almost like, you know, that's what they do. That's how they hone their skills. It's like, you know, they're sparring. They're doing all this stuff, and Andronicus is out of his mind. He's
like,
wait a minute. We're trying to run a ship here. What is going on? And, you know, this is supposed to be a controlled space. And you've got all sorts of, you know, probably physical, you know, bantering and fighting. And, but all in, you know, their own, like you said, that kind of bar scenario where there's this aggression happening, and they're kind of going at it. And, so Andronicus is just like a little overwhelmed, and he's looking at them, and, you know, he's not sleeping. He's right on at his wit's end, and he's about to lose it. And somewhere out of nowhere arrives Primus Teos.
And this guy just steps into the room.
Right, and so he's upset.
He's not happy.
Like, wait a minute, you broke our security. How did you get on the ship? Who are you to come in here and try to take command of my ship like this? So he's, you know, immediately on edge. And Primus Teos, you know, tries to explain to him and has a discussion and gets everything in order. And also removes a few of them, including Barkum, from the ship. Sends them, you know, somehow transports them off the ship.
It kind of, there's the feeling of he kind of drags them by the scruff of the neck, you know, yeah, get out of there, he just comes in and sorts the whole place out.
Right.
And these guys scatter, don't they? I mean, you know.
They respect him.
They're scared of him.
The command is Primus Teos, is they have to listen. And even though they begrudgingly do, and I know that Barkum does not really care for any authority, and so that really makes it hard on him. And he's immediately, you know, considered to be removed, sent back to maybe a training field where he has to do some hard labor or something. But the others are, you know, kind of in agreement, and what he does is he tells them that they all need to go into hypersleep. And they didn't want to, but they do that. And so Andronicus finally gets some rest. The only two that stay awake are Ketron and Ketriton, which are brothers. And then that's where they have their battle over who's going to be in charge of their tribe.
And that's just so typical of reptilians. You know, they wait till everybody else is asleep. And then they hatch out a plot between them. Or they battle out between them. You know, all right, we're the only two left now. Okay, so it's either you or me. Okay, one of us has to be the leader, right? Right. Oh, so we got a battle to the death, right? Right. Okay, so Uchi will start, you know. And it's that kind of... And I can... You know, it's a real facepalm. Because imagine you got these two kind of arguing Klingon brothers on the deck of the Enterprise, and there's Picard just sitting in his chair staring at this whole thing with his face in his hand.
Yes, like what's going on? But not only that, Andronicus gets shocked because he sees, you know, Ketriton cutting off the arm of Ketron. He's just like, oh, I'm like, I've had enough of this, and he just cuts off his arm, and he's like horrified, like, what did you just do? That's your brother, you know? I mean, he just, it's beyond him. Because here you have this simple, very loving, kind, hey, you know, let's sit around the circle, let's share our food, let's give to one another. And then you have this brutish behavior. It didn't make any sense to him. And, you know, he was just beside himself. He just didn't know how to understand it. And they didn't trust him, and he didn't trust them. And, towards the end, they start to understand. He also realizes that they can grow their limbs back. So that's not a big deal. But it's sort of their rites of passage to do these things and culturally understand. And he's learning not to be judgmental of it entirely, but at the same time, he's kind of appalled by different things here and there, you know?
That's fascinating as well. When you talk about this guy called himself Captain K. Have you heard of this guy?
He spends
17 years on Mars being part of the Mars Defense Force battling against reptilians and mantoids in the North Pole of Mars, guarding a gated community that houses billionaires. Well, that all came out in one go. That was quite good.
See what the name is, Captain K, like the Ketrons?
Well, he's a hybrid. You know,
right.
He's a hybrid super soldier. And he says he's been blown up, you know, many, many times, almost to the point of being like there's just the kind of spark of him left, and they managed to kind of rebuild him and revive him using these advanced technologies that they have, which basically, just like the Ketronians, take a person who's injured and make them whole again.
Yeah.
Amazing, eh?
Yeah, it is.
So there we go. So we got these two brothers, and so the one who loses the arm basically is the you know, because he can't do the command thing with his index finger anymore. So the other one wins and is therefore the director, right? Yeah, is that the way it works?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
yeah, becomes the head of the group now, and they have to listen to him.
And his name is
Catriton.
Catriton. So now we have Catriton, and he takes things in a different direction, or his way. What is Catriton's way?
Well, interesting enough, they're supposed to be headed toward Satar, which is Saturn, but Andronicus pronounces it Satar, and they end up, I don't know if we've introduced this yet, but they end up in Neptune.
All right, no, I haven't been to Neptune yet, so that this is coming up in the future episodes.
Right, and who's in command? Triton.
Triton. So, Triton on Neptune.
That's how he got there. Yep, that's how he got there.
Okay, so we have Triton, we have the Triton, the Trident, and the Trihards and Blowhards. So we've got the beginning of our mythical history that is actually occurring outside of our planet. So when we may look for Mount Olympus, we may be actually talking a metaphor. Or that they had, you know, they got other homes, you know? Like
or
Dick Cheney's.
We were at one of their outposts. Yeah, that too. Yeah. Interesting that Captain K has a K.
Indeed. Yeah.
It
may be that the K is part of the reptilian language that is like I was saying on Babylon 5. The characters are called Jakar, Jaquan, Katwan, you know, they've all got this in front, you know, like in Zulu they have the sound, and different things that are pronounced on it would be very interesting to hear what you know, mantids sound like and things like that if they actually spoke, you know, non-telepathically. But there's this sound of Kerr at the beginning of the reptilians' names, and then we have
particularly the Tritons or the Titans.
Yes, the Titans and the Tritons and you know, it's a bit. To me, it's just a bit like it's like a title, you know, Mister, you know, or Ms. like Ms. Morocco,
sure.
You know, or Mister Spock, you know, he's known as Mister Spock. His name is Spock, but. But Captain Kirk calls him Mr. Spock because...
Bit of a prefix.
Yeah, always gives people... You know, the captain always calls people Mr. You know?
Mm-hmm.
If they have no title, they're Mr., you know, whatever. Because they're somehow... What the heck are they doing on the bridge, Mr.? What are you doing on the bridge, Mr.? And so you become Mr. Spock and Mr., you know... Anyhow, Mr. Sulu. So, meanwhile, back in Andronicus' world, he's finally, he's finally got, the brothers have got peace. Primus Teos has taken away the arseholes and put the rest in deep freeze, so they're all out of the way. Is Triton now happy and able to let Andronicus get a night's rest?
Yeah, they you know, they really look at Andronicus as non-threatening. They could have harmed him. They could have harmed all of the Andromedans. But the Andromedans are, you know, the ones that are supplying food. They're the farmers. You know, they're caring for the atmospheric stuff. Here they're carrying them in the ship. So there's somewhat of a, you know, a gratitude that begins to develop, and that the Andromedans are at first, you know, Andronicus is very, very upset when he meets the Ketrons, in Ketron in particular, because Ketron puts on this really loud tone that is piercing to Andronicus. He's very put off by him, and the Vegas, in particular Gupta, have to pull him aside and say, you need to not be angry and resentful toward them, but because neither one of you get along, you're going to have to kind of work it through. And so they get to understand and know a little bit about each other, and so the hostility and the aggression, which it was kind of, you know, like a dog walking down a trail and another dog shows up and immediately, you know, the hair is on end and their teeth are showing and there's a bark. It was the same thing. The Ketrons were doing that. You know, they're trying to intimidate the other species immediately so that they can get it under control right away. And once Andronicus recognizes that, he realizes that there is some form of understanding that they develop, and there are attributes about each other that they do seem to like. And so it was meaningful for the crews to kind of get together and take this trip, so there's a form of gratitude that takes place. But there is something that is noticeable to me that Andronicus doesn't, you know, he's kind of so accustomed to seeing it that it was not obvious to him, and that was a black stone that I noticed on the back of their necks, kind of behind, you know, above the shoulder and beneath the head, you know, the vertebrae in that area, was this black stone that was protruding and almost looked like it was connected directly to the vertebrae, and almost sort of like a horn looking piece, but it was pure black. And I was wondering what that stone was, and all of the Titans had them. And I said, well, what is that stone? I said, that did not look unusual to you. And he said, with all the unusual things about them compared to us, that was something that would least bothered us.
You know, just it's like you wanted to notice something weird about them. They're already weird. They're yeah, already beyond our saying. Experience. Yeah. You can really understand that. So, but you brought it to his attention, and and of course, you know, we've been talking about the black stones of Shungite, but there's like that's the good black stone, but there are bad black stones which are also quantum entangled, which are probably, you know, I believe this stuff comes out of stars. I believe this black carbon material comes out of stars as it's like a carbon arc product. Because a star is an enormous carbon arc. Anyway, long story. It's an electrode. It's not a bomb. It's an electrode, and it translates energy from the higher dimensions down into the lower dimensions. That's why it's cold out in space and only warm on the surface of the planet. Anyhow.
Yeah.
Go on.
He looks at the stone, and so he doesn't get back to me until, you know, the next transmission. He starts telling me the story. It was like he started thinking about it, and he said that he asked Ketron, I believe it was Ketron, about the black stone. And Ketron took it out and out of his neck, and then handed it to him. And went to hand it to him, and he said, "No, no, no." He goes, because he put it in Andronicus's hand, and Andronicus was ready to put it on the back of his neck to see what it was like. And so Ketron said, "You can't do that. You're not one of us." And so immediately, you know, there was this feeling like, "Well, what exactly is this?" And Ketron is then gone, and he picks up the stone and he's examining it, and he realizes that the other properties, it was much more potent before, but some of the properties, maybe it was a programming or what had him connected in to this type of command, because technically everyone that was under them had this stone in them, and it was a way that they kind of were able to communicate. And it was a way that they were able to keep them in the military mindset of what their mission was instead of going off kind of. And what they found out later is that Barkham had lost his stone. That's why he was out of order. He was just acting rambunctious, and they couldn't calm him down, and so they sent him back, and they had to reinsert the stone. And so then I start to see this other Titan named Kraton. And Kraton is, he ended up on, you know, as they journey, he went to this planet where all this black stone existed. And he picked it up, and the stone had this ability to carry information, and also, I won't say it was programmable. Not, you know, I mean, they talk about the programmable matter. You know, that's something that's man-made, but we're talking about something that, you know, maybe had, you know, everything's living, so in some way this stone had a form of intelligence.
Oh, yeah. We know that Shungite has a consciousness that you can communicate with, and you can ask it to do things. And in that way, that's what, you know, that's what I mean by programming something. You can ask it to, you know, they're very happy to cooperate with you. You don't have to force them. So in that way, it's
a
programming.
That's a positive. Yeah, that's a positive black stone.
Yeah. So and this is a positive black stone. So, and it's coming very close to like the black oil in Twin Peaks, the black goo in what's the other one? The X-Files, and Harold Caltzavella's black goo, and the black goo that is the reason for the Falklands War. And the black stone of the Nazis, known as the Schwarzstein, otherwise known as the Brotherhood of the Black Stone, or the SS. So basically, this all comes back to. Hang on. All comes back to. No, wrong one. This one. Oh, sorry. I always get these things wrong. Anyway, it all comes back to. Aldebaran.
It does. All right, so let's take this back now. You mentioned all the different places where the black stone exists, but you didn't talk about the Dome of the Rock.
Yes, indeed. This is another black stone that people have to kiss once in their life. So if you're talking about a nanotechnology that has to come into contact with your skin to kind of infect you, or program you, or multiply in your body to create some form of weird sort of DNA whizzling control pattern, hive mind, collective consciousness thing, please go ahead.
Yeah, so this Titan by the name of Kraton went to this planet, and because this intelligent stone would take on the attribute of whatever the person that connected with it had, whatever the consciousness was at that time. And Kraton was in a mindset of warfare. So he takes the stone with him, and immediately it programs the stone to be in the mindset of violence and warfare, and then brings it back with him to the other Titans, and then as a commander, kind of like Primus Teus. So he might have been Primus Kraton, and had taken the stone and insisted that everyone wear them, so and he gained control of the command. And then you see that later on, you know, this stone, you know, is, like I said, he's noticing that the stone exists, and they all hold their rank. They all do what they're supposed to do. But the Dome of the Rock, I was, you know, think about the Titans, and one of their stones would be missing from the back of their neck. I mean, what size would it be if it was a giant? Could it be that exact size of that stone that's there?
So what
could that be? One of the stones that were on the back of the neck of one of the Titans?
Right. So what you're proposing is that the device or the thing, the artifact, the object that is in the Dome of the Rock it's the Kaaba in Mecca.
But that's what it is.
Is the big cube, And right at the corner of the cube is this kind of big sort of eye-like, sort of vagina-like thing, and right in the middle of that is set this silver mounting, and in the silver mounting is this black stone. And mm-hmm. every Muslim is supposed to touch this, to kiss this. Now, if, for instance, there is something about it that is like shungite, it has a possible cleansing effect, but it could have, you know, depending on the mindset of the person who is who that belongs to, or the group that that belongs to, so it then becomes a kind of psychic war as to who controls the black stone. Dan, dan. Hang on a second.
Program.
Fascinating.
The black stone. Who controls the black stone is connected with the Fourth Reich and the Vril Society. So keep going.
Yeah, and you're looking at that, like, I mean, there's a few different theories now. So, all right, so what if that was an original stone of the Titans that was programmed for warfare, still being dictated by Kraton, who ends up on Saturn? That could be the Satan, you know, name that we got. I was just trying to come up with all these different ideas, and then also, was really fascinating to me. I have a friend of mine who was married to a man that was from Morocco, and she was talking about the Sharia law, and I was like, wait a minute, where did I hear that name? I said, well, that was the name that they were calling the priestess of Aldebaran that tried to take over the planet Zephron. And so does that mean that the Aldebarans were involved with this black stone, which then, as you verified, that the Nazis did use the black stone as well. So the Aldebaranians, you know, did come through, and maybe they're the ones that have reprogrammed the stone. So there's just these different theories of you know, these off-planet beings coming in and trying to influence our experience through, an off-planet stone, you know, or space stone, as you have it. And look how it's influenced that part of the world, you know, where what's their thought mindset is a form of warfare, which coincides with the Titan experience, is everything's about war. So it's a theory. I mean, obviously I couldn't prove it, but it's something to consider, and it adds more to some of the origin about the, you know, the black stone and what maybe where it possibly came from. I don't know if it's a one and the same with the black goo, but it does seem to have a similar effect.
Well, what it seems to be is something to do with a particular formation of carbon, which is what we call on Earth shungite, or buckyballs. Now, I believe that buckyballs are the product of stars. It's like the the build up, like the crystal build up on something, you know, and it occasionally gets ejected and then thrown into space and may land on a planet, and it's a big chunk of the stuff and it's black, and it's like the arc lamp remnants, you know. Imagine if you had a massive arc lamp like they use in the cinemas or searchlights. You know, you eventually get this dust at the bottom of it because you have to keep, you know, it gets used up. A lot of the carbon gets burnt away and boiled away as carbon dioxide, but some of it, you know, ends up... Anyway, so basically you end up with carbon product, and it gets ejected out of stars and lands on planets and has intelligence because it's part of a star. And it's part of the cosmic stuff. And it's programmable. And so if you have a very powerful psychic person picking up lumps of this and sending them out with intent, then just the same as what Nancy's been doing by sending things out with good intent, this guy sends these things out with manipulative intent, and that's what happens.
Right, whoever is in charge of the programming of this black stone is influencing all those that are involved or interacting with it, whether it's on this planet or off-world.
Exactly. And so if you had an evil Nazi organization underground in the world, and you had a device or material that could instantly communicate to everybody on a quantum level without having to use radio waves or any other form of, you know, communication, that you just go remote control and everybody switches on. That would be handy for you if you had that sort of organization, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we may have a clue as to how we may be able to disable this network. So perhaps if we can somehow neutralize the black stone that that Cetriton originally used to make war, yeah, and we can deprogram Kraton.
That was, yeah, make sure it's Kraton, because you don't want to get Triton involved in that.
All right, he's very sensitive about that, yeah. Kraton, yeah.
Kraton.
Okay, so, wow. I mean, this has been an amazing journey, Jessica. We've got a YouTube channel there, Studio 9 Jam, and you can go there, and I've got a playlist. I'll pop the playlist in the chat room here. I think that's it. Yeah, that, which is, you know, you can listen to all the episodes, and it's great. It's like a science. Maybe we should do an audio version, like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You know, it was just originally a radio show. So it's just me and Jessica, and I'm reading the voice of Andronicus, and then we talk about it a little bit, how it all kind of interacted with our lives, and it's just incredible. So, Jessica Morocco, please, your website, how do people get hold of you, and what else do you want them to know? How can they hire you? You know, do you do private readings and stuff?
I do Akashic record readings, and also I can talk to people about if they're having any type of connection to extraterrestrials or any paranormal activity. And my website is readingsbyariel.com, and that's ARAEL.com. So readingsbyariel.com. And my email is jessica@readingsbyariel.com. So I can be reached, you know, if someone wants to schedule an appointment or have a discussion with me. I always love to talk to people about, you know, whatever their experience is, if they want to send me some information. And also, what's really kind of exciting is when people find a common thread to something that we're talking about in Andronicus, and then they, you know, have some questions or some experience regarding that, and feel free to contact me for that as well directly. And listen to the show. I mean, we also have these on YouTube. I just felt like that was something that we should do, is kind of archive them and make them available to people to listen to. That we probably should identify and highlight each transmission, so you kind of can filter through which ones you want to hear. But listening to it, you know, right from the beginning to the end sometimes is the best way. And you're going to get pieces of information in the after talk that maybe you can listen to or pass over. But there's a lot of little, you know, a lot of good gems in there too, that some of the topics that we discussed that might be helpful to you. But as far as I know, it's going to continue going on. And also, you know, my book, The Seer, Violets in the Grass, talks a little bit about my background and some of the type of work that I've done, my experiences with the extraterrestrials and paranormal, some of the psychic stuff and mediumship as well that I do. So thank you so much, JP, for letting me be a part of your show, and also this wonderful journey of Andronicus and the being from Andromeda. So thank you.
Indeed. So with that...